The following program is part of the Inner Circle Podcasting Group. Go to innercirclecomics.com for more high-quality podcasts.
Doom Patrol. Negative Man. Elastigirl. Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Kaldao. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the world's greatest and pretty much only Doom Patrol podcast, where we talk about all things Doom Patrol.
That is the total truth, Mike. I'm Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_hicks, and you can email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, and we're on Facebook, and every single one of our excellent episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
Don't forget, you can also find us as part of the Inner Circle Comics website. Yes, hi, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at avantgarde. You can also find our sentient show Twitter account, Wilfred, at WFDpod.
This week, we're stoked to be joined by someone who has an incredible amount of Doom cred. He's doing more than any other creator right now to put the Doom Patrol front and center on the map. He's been a man who's toiled in the comic trenches for more than 20 years. You may know and love his Marvel work on Agents of Atlas, X-Men First Class, The Incredible Hulk. You may love his Dynamite writing with Flash Gordon and King's Watch. Or you may know him from Wildstorm with Mysterious the Unfathomable, which is
good
hard
luck,
to say.
Yeah.
And he's done a recent run on Aquaman, which is excellent. And he is the current writer of Justice League United. We're talking to Jeff Parker today.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the Doomcast.
Thank you for joining us, Jeff. This is great.
And when I looked for your bibliography, you worked for the Ultraverse on Solitaire.
I did. That was the first paid work I think I got in comics.
That's wow. Amazing. I was a huge Ultraverse fan, so that's very exciting.
Yeah. I was part of a studio called Artemis in North Carolina, and spelled wrong on purpose, like Toys R Us. And I was in it with I was like the junior, just starting to get some work, guy who, you know, was trying to find work at the time. And I was in there with Mike Waringo, Chuck Wojtkiewicz, Richard Case, who I think you know.
Oh, yeah.
I've known Richard for a long time. And what I would do, I would do my sample pages. And whenever someone like Mike was going to send in something to an editor, I would put my stuff in the FedEx box, you know, to go in. So all editors also had to look at my whatever samples I was doing that week. And that's how I ended up getting work, which was a great way to piggyback on everybody else and guaranteed that you were going to get looked at because you came in a box that they wanted because it had art they needed in it, you know?
Yeah.
You're official.
And, I think I had sent in Fantastic Four samples actually that I'd done. I don't know if I'd ever actually gotten it to anybody at Marvel at the time, but I put them in John Lowe, who inked a lot of comics for the Multiverse. I think I put it in his or whatever Ringo was drawing, and Hank Canals saw it and really liked them, and that's how I ended up getting it because Jeff Johnson was fading out or something on the Solitaire book, and they just brought me in. You always get your work from someone else failing.
Yeah,
that's generally the way it goes in comics. You're always looking for that spot where someone gets sick or bails on a project, and that's where you come in.
Right. So it's a little bit Hunger Games, is what you're saying.
Pretty much, yes.
Fantastic. Well, usually at this point of the show, we talk about our week in comics a little bit. So, what have you been up to in comics this week, Jeff?
Well, it's still beginning of the week for me. I'm just waiting for the Justice League United to come out today, which will, of course, you know, have Robot Man in it.
Oh, we know.
We know.
Yes. I know. I'm sorry for you guys. You guys have to wait for any little scrap of like, will someone mention Rita in this comic or something? It's just like, what will happen that will be tangentially related?
So you are well aware of the basic premise of the show then, really?
But you're You're out there doing the Lord's work. You know?
This is true. Yes.
Well, I hope you did enjoy Agents of Atlas when I did, because that was pretty much Marvel's Doom Patrol at the time. It's what I think my editor wanted it to be. Because he would, every time he would reference something, he would mention Doom Patrol.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I should have realized that's what you were going for the whole time.
That's awesome. Well, our week in comics, well, Mike and I have both downloaded Justice League United as soon as it was available, which was about 4 hours ago.
Yes.
So we've read it already. And
oh, okay.
Some of us have read it twice, Paul.
Twice. You've read it twice.
While the rest of us were sleeping, you were reading
comics. Well, it's our evening. We're late in our evening now, so it's early morning for you, and you've gotten up ridiculously early. We had to wake up Jeff. Which is a great song in Australia.
Well, I only got up an hour earlier, but I'm certainly going to lord it all over you and expect you to drive me places if I come down there.
Deal. Done deal. Done deal.
Well, hopefully we've driven the numbers up on Justice League United because we've been talking about it nonstop all week.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yeah. But a great book. That was excellent. So you're doing a sort of an ensemble piece with the Justice League United, grabbing people from the DC Universe who can help fight the dimensional intruders called the Breakers.
Yes.
Yeah. And so we got a bit of Sergeant Rock and Easy Company. We got Vandal Savage, Batgirl, and of course, Cliff Steele, Robot Man, Man Who Is a Robot, as you said. He coined for us.
Actually, that I'll give Andy Curry credit for that. He put that in originally. A lot of people assume, since I write a lot of humor into my stuff, like the editors will try to sneak in their own little jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And like, okay, I saw that, and then I'm like, all right, okay, I'll let it stay because it's very well something I could have written. it's like, okay, then I feel guilty if somebody likes the joke. It's really Andy. I've got to give him credit every time.
Okay.
And using Steel as well, which is good. So Cliff Steel and Steel together. I don't think I've ever seen them together in a comic.
It's strange. I'm putting I did that in the last group where we had Swamp Thing and Poison Ivy. Mm. I'm trying to mess with people's assumptions about, oh, you would have one plant-based or one robot on this team, blah, blah, blah. No, two. just put more people together like that. But strangely, as you'll see as the story goes on, it really works out doing a dynamic you wouldn't expect.
And
that's kind of what the whole thing of the book is, getting weird dynamics going that you would normally not get.
That's
bringing in characters who would ordinarily never team up.
Yeah, that's what I'm loving about it so far. Just the completely different, unexpected combinations. As you said, Poison Ivy and Swamp Thing, you're kind of like, well, isn't one of them kind of overkill? But when they work together, it worked really well. So, yeah. So do you pretty much have free reign with whichever characters you want to put into a story, Jeff? Or have you sort of been given certain boundaries by the powers that be?
Yeah, I still have to ask. Like, I'm going around asking for a cup of sugar at everyone's door. Like, oh, can I have a cup of Beast Boy? Or something like that. You know, generally, though, it's like, okay, just everybody who's not in the main Justice League, you know, because they're already represented. So.
Yeah, true.
And I did do some things like you noticed, bringing Mera into the first story to kind of carry over from some of my Aquaman readers, because she's got some very fervent fans. And I felt like, well, this will give them a place to read a little more about her. So that'll be nice.
Mm.
Yeah. And, I mean, Mike said to me earlier, we were messaging each other, he said, it's got a very Brave and the Bold feel. And I have to agree with that. And to me, I mean, it really reminds me of
that cartoon.
Some of the stuff that Rick Veitch was doing in Swamp Thing, where he did that time travel story. And, you know, everyone was on the table throughout DC history suddenly.
I love that stuff.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite runs, that one. But, I mean, you bring in Enemy Ace at the end of this, so we've got the World War One fighter pilot, which is awesome.
Yeah, I was wondering, it's like, I was personally just getting crazy excited as I was writing it. Like, yes, Enemy Ace shows up. And I was like, does anybody else care about this? Is this only me? And, no. and then as usual, the thought just went, what do I care? It's always about pleasing me. And that's my whole attack. It's just like hoping other people think like me and trying to amuse myself. And I was just like, oh, it'd be so cool if Enemy Ace showed up earlier than I originally had him in the outline.
Oh, wow.
Because I just couldn't wait.
Yeah, it was a great juxtaposition of Enemy Ace with Stargirl. You can't get two characters more different.
Yeah, and as you'll see in the next issue, Enemy Ace is running around hanging out with Stargirl like you do. That's just what happens
of
in
course.
The DC universe.
Yeah.
That's awesome. How many issues of Robot Man are we going to get out of this?
Well, it's the three-issue arc, so that's how much he's in it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Better than nothing.
You never know what's going to be the thing that catches, though, and then editors go, oh, okay, we definitely need more of this.
Mm.
So you got to try.
Yes. Well, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to spread the word that, you know, Robot Man's back, and it's also such an interesting concept and such a great written story that people should be checking it out anyway. But, you know, they've got the added bonus of Robot Man, who might potentially lead to more. We never know.
And,
yeah.
And then you see me do things that betray what I like in the comics where, you know, we start out with him with the big jacket on, which is, you know, or whatever. But I immediately have it blasted off. Because really, my favorite Robot Man is the skinny, gaunt Bruno Premiani Robot Man.
Yeah, that's great. And with the blue chest thingy and the little speaker.
Mm.
Yeah, I love that Robot Man.
So would it be fair to say that the original 60s run is your favorite era of the Patrol?
Oh, definitely.
Jeff? Yeah?
It's very fair. I think Arnold Drake was a genius. Premiani's just the most gorgeous work. It's you know, you can just pore over those pages and they're not dated at all. They're still good.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we've been working our way through them a few at a time, and cut up in different episodes of the show. But yeah, it's been a real treat to discover them for the first time for me.
With the one Grant and Richard did?
Oh, we jump all over the place. We didn't want to do a linear pass through the Doom Patrol history because then everybody's waiting for their favorite era and we never get there. So we actually just
kind of you made me think, because when I was a kid, I was kind of a fan of, like, I really liked Robot Man and would draw pictures of him and everything, but I couldn't find him in any comics. You know, he would just maybe turn up in a Justice League appearance or something like that once in a while, or something, because I'm like, you know, a kid reading like the late 70s, early 80s comics. So I'm getting probably, you know, not the best versions of everything, but I just thought he was so cool. And I liked, and of course, when you're young, wanting to draw a character is the big thing, you know, so.
Yeah,
that's what it's like. Oh, I just like doodling this character, and I don't know. I just thought he was very neat, even when he had that weird little robo mullet thing on the back of his head.
Yeah, and personality-wise, I mean, I think you really captured him in the comic. Like, he's like the Joe Schmo of the team. He's there to help. You know, he's not going to be a genius or anything, but he'll you know, take a bullet for everybody else.
Yeah, it's important to remember he's not a genius. He's okay. He's pretty good. He can drive a race car.
Yeah.
Well, to a certain extent, yeah.
He's very similar
to
Hellboy.
Good point. And maybe he's not the best race car driver in the world when you think about it.
Maybe for short races, sure. Anything too long, maybe not. No. I've got to admit, I love the panel where he's basically leapt in front of, you know, a shotgun blast and protected Batgirl. And Batgirl's basically said, yeah, I'm staying behind you from now on. That just, I literally laughed out loud at that. That was like, that's classic Cliff, you know, just doing the right thing and protecting his teammates. Even though he's been on the team for all of 5 minutes, he always does the right thing.
Just joined the team. He's such a player. He just jumps right in there.
Yeah, like, yeah.
So apart from the art, what made the book special to you, the original Doom Patrol?
You know, it had a very, it had a quality of the sci-fi TV shows at the time. You know, kind of Outer Limits, Twilight Zone feel to it. But it also, you know, and of course, what everyone would clue into later is just the weirdness of it. It just, But the thing is, it's like it wasn't like Drake was trying to be weird. At least, he doesn't say that he was. It just came kind of natural. Mm. When you're reading the stories and, like, you know, the chief's talking about, so when he finally gives his origin and he's telling, like, I was brilliant. And, of course, he's always telling you how brilliant he was. And, like, yeah, I made breakthroughs like grafting a little dog's head onto the body of another dog.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's the most bizarre, unsettling panel. When you see this little dog's head just grafted onto another dog.
Yep.
They're just dropping it in. Like, of course, that's what you would do if you were a brilliant scientist.
Yeah.
And you're trying to figure out the secret of life for General Immortus. It's so weird. Yet, it's just kind of dropped in. What I love about it is it doesn't focus on how weird it is. Mm. It just kind of is presented like anything else, and they just get past it. And I also, you may have noticed, I'm a big fan of the kind of just the hyper compressed storytelling. Mm-hmm. Part of that is because I'm always afraid, you know, it's like, who knows how long I have on any project. I better just try to get everything in. So my stuff tends to go really fast. And I like, they did that all the time. There's just another crazy idea coming at you within a couple of panels.
Yeah.
You know, and they just have to roll with it constantly. Grow really big, you know, or something, because and now there's this queer lava monster thing coming up out of the ocean floor. And, you know, it's just constantly hitting you with great stuff like that. And then when you get to modern day comics, they're just everybody sits down and talks and drinks coffee and and they just talk for pages. And it's, yeah, you're just thinking, like, this is, if I were a kid, I wouldn't know why I was supposed to get into this, you know? Mm. I mean, it's only neat when you consider it against all the other adventures all the characters used to have, for characters to be sitting around talking all the time. Because you're like, oh, well, this discussion matters because they did this and this and this. Except they don't actually do all that stuff now.
They just talk about it, yeah.
They just talk about it. Yeah. It's very frustrating. And I always feel like you can have the discussions, but have them while you're exploring the cave or descending in the hole or whatever.
Mm. Yeah.
That probably didn't even remotely answer what you were asking, but as I pointed out, I'm usually not awake yet. So
it's fine. It's fine. Were there any other eras of the Patrol apart from the original run that you kept tabs on over the years?
Oh, well, of course. I mean, it was easy to keep. I was always peeking in when Richard was drawing it. Mm-hmm. Even though by the time we were doing the studio, he was kind of really wrapping up his run, and he and Grant were going into a series called Ghost Dancing.
Okay.
If I'm remembering that right. You know, I'd go in there, and I was always reading things out of order. So to me, it was very disjointed and probably even stranger than it actually was.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know it's hard to think. But some of it I was like, I felt like it was being weird to be weird. Mm-hmm. Even though, yeah, obviously they were executing it wonderfully. I was just like, it's like the first series didn't have to try that hard.
Yeah.
It was just naturally weird. I'm trying to think of what other things. I was reading a few years ago, my friend Matthew Clark was drawing it.
Yes. I got to meet Matthew Clark at HeroesCon this year. So,
oh, did you go to Heroes? Like,
yeah, yes. I managed to make it for my birthday this year. So I got to meet him and have a bit of a meltdown because it was Matthew's art that on that cover of their first issue that grabbed me and made me trigger a memory of earlier Doom Patrol stuff. And yeah, so Matt was like one of my, you know, artist heroes that I got to meet, which was great.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
He's excellent, isn't he?
Mm, oh, yeah. Yeah. He was really nice to talk to, and he was quite graceful with my babbling, shall we
say. He understands.
Yeah.
He's such a good artist, too, and such a very sweet guy. Mm. But, yeah, he was really working hard on that. I occasionally see when he was doing pages, and I still felt like he was, but I feel this all the time with him. He was making it more work than it had to be. I was like, this doesn't have to. That's just the way he is. He can't make anything simple. A lot of artists are like that. They're just going to make it as much work as humanly possible. And I work with guys like that, and you'll try to make it so, like it's just the character floating in water. You know, you try to create a breather page where they can catch up on their deadlines and maybe take a break, and they'll still just find a way to fill it with detail and make it as if I had written a whole "The Trojan Army Marches Over the Hill" scene.
Oh, wow.
Carlo Pagliaion was like that. He's still like that. You know, you try to find a way to take it easy on him, but no, he's just gonna fill the time anyway. It's some kind of self-flagellating thing a lot of top of the line artists do to themselves.
Wow.
Some people don't. It's like, you know, well, Paul Pelletier, I make fun of him a lot for doing it too. You know, of course, he was really crying by the end of the story that you're reading now, because there's, you know, it literally turns into a big war story, and there's so many characters, and he's like, you're murdering me. And I'm like, I might as well, because you don't make it easier on yourself if I do write something simple with one character. So what's the point?
Based on 13, he's getting all the details right. Like Sergeant Rock and Easy Company look excellent. All the tanks look great from the different eras and the planes.
That's the best Rock and Easy Company have looked in years.
Yeah.
I just kept going back and staring at that part so well. I'm the biggest Joe Kubert fan in the world, but every now and then I want to see Rock without his shirt completely shredded, you know. Kubert would always kind of turn it into half Tarzan. So, you know, Rock's just sitting there with just some threads dripping off of him and a bandolier of bullets.
Yeah.
Because apparently Bulldozer can't carry the bullets for his own big gun. Rock has to do it. And we got in almost all of Easy Company, I think. And if you look way back in the back, there's a hidden character who is not in Easy Company, but is recognizable from DC War Comics.
Oh.
Yeah, go back and look.
We'll have to have another look.
I'm pretty sure he's in the end of the first story.
Okay, I'll have to read it for a third time.
Or just go back to the last page.
Okay.
Wow.
And, of course, the Hammer of Hell.
Yeah. So, do you have a favorite Doom Patrol character overall?
I mean, it's typical. I still obviously want to say Robot Man, just because as a kid I like drawing him so much. But I don't know. I really like Rita.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm not one of those people who have a giant girl fetish or anything. It's just I just thought she was cool. She was already doing the giant and shrinking thing way before anyone else. But she was kind of, I always felt she was sort of the victim of having a name that didn't sound like what she did.
Yeah.
Good point. Elastigirl, it sounds like she stretches.
Yeah.
And they should have changed that just like they changed Robot Man's name. He was Automaton.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
At the beginning. And I think they realized this isn't a good name. This is awful. Just call him what kids want to call him, Robot Man.
Yeah.
And she could have already been Giant Girl like way before they ever did. And I did a Giant Girl in the Marvel Adventures Avengers comics because, I didn't have enough slots for girls on the team from all the ones they gave me they wanted. So I was like, well, let me get her on there and I'll make if there can only be two women for some reason, I'll just make one of them enormous. So she has much more presence than she normally would.
Wow.
But clearly Premiani liked drawing her.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
she always has all the great scenes. Here she is lifting a boat out of the water, or fighting an octopus or something like that. Oh, it's just wonderful. And she's a movie star. That's always I love their backstories. The fact that she's a movie star just really helps it.
Do you have a favorite issue or arc or across the runs?
I'm always really bad at those favorite questions because I always like little bits of things more so usually than one story that just burns into my head.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe the first one, though, where you start to see the Brotherhood of Evil, because that's where the book really kind of finds its voice, I think. and it all starts coming together. Mm-hmm. And you can the fact that you can feel that happening is something I always appreciate. It's kind of like when the Fantastic Four, it's right when you start getting into the Inhumans, just a little bit before Galactus shows up, that's where the book really starts suddenly becoming what you remember as the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And I always like that moment in any series. That's the tough thing we have now is series don't get the time to find that footing anymore. Everybody expects us to come out selling across the gate when no one's read it yet.
Yeah. True. And yeah.
It's extremely frustrating for me. You know, like, it's like, come on, give me a little chance to work on something. That's why I like to often start new projects with somebody I've already worked with, so that we can hit the ground running and we all know what we're capable of. Like with the way I worked with Doc Shaner and Jordy Belair on Flash Gordon. And then we're able to come into Shazam, and by that point we're able to just boom like a running engine, you know, go into it, and we don't have to guess at how we're going to do anything. Everybody knows what everybody's going to do, and it's kind of wonderful when you can do that.
Mm. Just while we're talking about Flash Gordon, I'll have my quiet moment to babble and just say that was one of my favorite things I've ever read in the last year, Jeff. So thank you for that. I got to meet Doc Shaner at HeroesCon again. Sorry, Paul, for mentioning HeroesCon.
That was a good show.
And I actually bought a page of original art from Flash Gordon as well.
What'd you get?
I can't remember which issue it's in, but it's basically Dale and Flash in the little spaceship kind of flying upside down and about to crash through the clouds. And it's like four panels of this very fast, frantic action as they're trying to write the spaceship before they crash. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, just to me, that summed up that series so perfectly. The always, you know, threat of danger and chaos around the corner. So I couldn't leave without some of his art.
Oh, good for you. That was such a rewarding series for all of us to work on.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And King's Watch as well. It was... starting with that and Flash Gordon, I loved every page of it. So thank you for that too. Yeah.
Oh, Mark Laming did such a brilliant job on King's Watch.
Yeah.
It's funny because what I had originally signed on for was just Flash Gordon. You know, Nate Cosby gave me a list when he started working at Dynamite, and he's like, "Here's what I'm going to be editing. What do you want?" And I went right to Flash Gordon. I went, "Oh, Flash Gordon." And he's like, "What about this one or this one?" Nope. That's like, the only thing I'm interested in is that. And it was because for once, and I never have like some long held take on things that I want to do, but in that case, I actually did. And it was the whole idea that Flash was this kind of, and it's really sticking to his origin, but the idea that he was from old money. He went to college and he was just really good at all kinds of sports and adventuring and all the sort of stuff that actually doesn't get you anything in the modern world. You know, his dad thought of him as a failure because he didn't have any head for business. You know, Flash wants to go dive off some cliff somewhere. Yeah. He wants to go caving. He fences, he plays polo. He does all that sort of thing. And it's no good anywhere until he gets on Mongo, and then suddenly it makes him the man.
Yeah.
Because all of his skills just gel once he's there. And I had thought about that for years, and I thought, well, this is the place I could finally do that. And once he put the three of us together, it's just we just fed off each other. Mm. And it just came together so beautifully. And I felt it was important that, like, Flash doesn't need to know a lot about science, and why would he? You know, you don't have a lot of time for learning all that sort of thing when you're doing all his extreme sports. And it made more sense for Dale. I didn't like Dale being someone who had to have things explained to her. Mm-hmm. You know, she does come off a little Lois Laney in the story, but I like that focusing on her as a science reporter in particular.
Yeah.
I thought it was nice. And then Zarkov could just be as horrible as he wanted to be. It doesn't matter. He's brilliant, and you'll tolerate him because he's brilliant.
Yeah.
And mainly the other big thing I wanted to do was have Flash responsible for getting them to Mongo, because I never liked the whole thing in the origin where, you know, Zarkov holds them at gunpoint and takes them with him. Mm-hmm. It's like there's reluctant hero, and then there's hero that has things happen to them by the plot.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, the hero should be the one who caused all this. So, and then they, King Features had asked Dynamite, like, well, we've got our anniversaries and stuff coming up. Could we have our big three characters all appear? And I thought, okay, sure. It's like, I'm doing an invasion of the Earth anyway. I'll just roll it all together. So it gave me a way to do kind of a heavier story at first and then go into my lighter toned thing with Flash Gordon once they get there. And then, so a lot of people never read King's Watch and only read Flash Gordon. And they just thought I didn't care about explaining the whole setup. And I know that seemed probably kind of avant-garde, like, oh, they just hit the ground running. They're just immediately flying on the planet and you don't get any explanation. But there was this whole series that set it up.
Yeah.
Any plans for more with Flash Gordon?
I don't think so. I feel like we did everything we had to do with that. I mean, it's nice, but we'd like to work on some other stuff. Mm-hmm. We have something we're trying to get going at DC that we would really like to do.
Doom Patrol?
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea. Doom Patrol is always a good idea, but it's not particularly that. And I know everybody else then assumes it's Captain Marvel or of some kind, but... And we're not saying we won't do any Captain Marvel. We could get a little more or whatever. But mm-hmm. I'm a little torn there too, because I also feel like that those early Wiz comics, they were done as well as you can do them, I think. I mean, I really love that stuff. That's a problem I run into when I really like something a bit too much. Yeah, you know, I feel like, well, it's just done. Yeah. I was kind of that way about Walt Simonson's Thor.
Ah.
You know, I love that. I loved his run on that so much. Mm. I always thought, like, oh, I want to work on that one day. And then I thought, what would I do? Just regurgitate everything Walt did? it's a real problem. You actually have much more freedom when you come into something that you didn't have, like Thunderbolts. You know, I never really read Thunderbolts. I didn't have an opinion on it. I was completely wrong about what the premise was when the editor first asked me about it.
Mm-hmm.
I always assumed because of the name that it was something put together by Thunderbolt Ross.
Right.
And then, oddly enough, after my run, they did that.
Yeah, I read some of that one.
Yeah, I was like, what? This is weird. It just became what I originally assumed it was. And I think that was because back in the 90s, they originally had a appearance with the Hulk. Right at the beginning. So it just kind of cemented. It's like, oh, okay, they're fighting the Hulk. This was a Thunderbolt Ross, my brain just auto-filling in a story when it was completely not what the story was.
Oh. So do you think we need more Doom Patrol out there?
Oh, of course we do. And one, if nothing else, it's the best team name ever. It's really one of the ones every time I'm trying to come up with a new name for something in superhero comics, I always run into that wall. I was like, what about some kind of patrol, some kind of doom? You know, and I'm like, God, I'm so envious of like at the time of the 50s when all the good names haven't been used up.
Yeah.
And you could come up with something like that.
Yeah.
It's just the best name. And everything else, and you see lots of names that are trying to be that, and they just look like awful variants of it.
So if you were offered the book, of course you would jump at it.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I would, again, have to grapple with it, because as I say, like, you know, I think, well, I really like the way it was originally done. but you know, you eventually get over it, and then you start to realize, how can I would try to, and I assume this is what Morrison went through, of trying to, like, how do I make something that feels like that in this new context? You know, you can't obviously do the exact same thing unless you decided to set it in the 60s or whatever. But, you know, you're trying to look for something that has the same spiritual feeling, I guess, to connect to the original.
And a lot of today's audience would never have checked out the original anyway. So that, you know, a reintroduction to that, what made the team great, would be, you know, good for some people.
Yeah, so it's hard to remember what was going on at the time. Like, superheroes were just starting to come back, I think, at the time Doom Patrol came back. It was still more, they were still doing more genre stuff, like, you know, science fiction and mystery and stuff when they come in.
Came out around the same time. And
yeah, Challengers is big. And then over at Marvel, they're trying to get something going with the Fantastic Four at first, and that's clearly them trying to do well. It, you know, you always get the thing that's X-Men is trying to be Doom Patrol,
yeah.
And you have some, yeah, and you have some proof by the fact that they hire the Doom Patrol team away, to work on X-Men later. So it's like, oh no, I really think they're trying to be Doom Patrol, yeah. I don't know why you would say that people wouldn't read it, except for the fact that people just, it doesn't have Batman in it. Yeah.
They can put him in issue 4. That's perhaps what that, it does.
Perhaps that's the answer here. Perhaps just Batman as part of the Doom Patrol is what needs to happen.
Well, it worked for that episode.
Thanks, guys. You helped me figure that out.
Yeah, that's the thing. That was one episode, Paul. It worked in one episode.
So, if you were given $10 million not to write the Doom Patrol, who would you want to see doing it instead?
Well, Gabe Hardman.
Yeah.
That's pretty much who I'd want to see. Whatever. And Gabe can write, too. So, you know, maybe he and Corinna could write it together or something. But that's what I want it to look like, anyway. I don't know. There's so many good artists. And it came up yesterday, like...
I saw that fight on Twitter. Yes, all you creative.
Yeah, Matthew Dow Clark.
Yeah,
just suddenly asserted himself on it, and yeah, he'd definitely draw an excellent Doom Patrol. Mm. I don't know why he was suddenly thinking about it and just wanting to do it, but it really is one of those books. It's an artist's favorite, you know.
Yeah,
we've had Chris Sabella on the show, and he's got a great affection for the Doom Patrol too. So,
oh, he would kill at it. Just imagine what he would do.
He hasn't really had a DC book or anything like that yet.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Once he gets out of that clown hotel, so.
Well, we don't know what's going to come. We know Chris is going in. Who knows what comes out of the clown motel?
That's right.
Whoever that creator next month that we meet, maybe he will be the one who can figure out how to make the Doom Patrol sell to the general public. Mm.
Yeah, it's funny because the creators have gravitated to us on Twitter about the Doom Patrol, and we've had Gabe on and we've had Chris on. They're all our favourite people who we wanted to see involved in the book, and you, we would add to that list easily.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's like the cool kids club.
You can
tell if you're going to like somebody. Like, look, you can just bring up some Doom Patrol reference, and if they can answer, then you go, all right, they're okay.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about the Doom Patrol as a property for other media? Do you think it would be a good TV show or movie? Or
it always felt like a TV show. Just like, especially now that you can do all these effects, just imagine what a cool whacked out TV show you could do with it. Mm. Oh, I just think it would be so good.
It'd probably be a lot cheaper to do Robot Man these days than it would have been a few years ago. But yeah.
Negative Man would be so easy.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Wow. Didn't even think of him.
Yeah, just imagine.
Yeah.
And you could just do him with the, of course, have the bandages, but, you know, doing the see-through glowing face thing. That would be such a neat thing that would creep out little kids. And
fantastic.
And it looks like, you know, I'm seeing the previews of the new Supergirl show. And they're doing a lot of stuff. It's like, this looks like a pretty good effect. Mm. You know, and they're pulling off all this stuff on TV. So, like, surely they could do Elastigirl that way.
Yeah,
that would definitely be awesome.
TV's my vote.
TV? Yeah, more room to explore it. And it matches the way the original show was.
You can do long-form stories.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's your favorite Doom Patrol villain?
Mm.
I know you don't like favorite questions, but...
I know, they always mess me.
Well, because they always, an hour later, I always think, no, my real favorite is, and then I'm nowhere around. I mean, it's easy to go with the brain because he's the brain. And it's like, how do you improve? It's such a core concept of, yes, this is all you need is just an actual brain. And it's so very DC's of that time. Yeah, I know that's probably what everybody says, but yeah, I really like that.
Mm. Yeah, I'd love to have a Brain and Mallor sketchbook for people, every artist I meet to
control. I've seen actually several Brain and Mallor sketchbooks.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know I've drawn in a couple. It's like, and that's other things. Like, any DC book at the time was giving you a gorilla. Of course, that was just a given. But the fact that they thought to make him French is really what it's just completely. I know it's
extra just sets
it. It just sets it apart. You know, I mean, it's sad that it took so long for him to finally get the beret, but. But I mean, that's the little extra detail that reminds you, like, no, don't just stop at a gorilla. You know, keep going with that idea.
Yeah.
Take it further. Yeah, I mean, I know they always turn up as everybody's or Danny the Street or something, but I don't know. It's something about a brain and a you just kind of can't beat that.
Fantastic. Well, we might wrap up our talk.
Immortus looked creepy, though.
Mortis.
Yeah. Yes. He's kind of a weird looking guy. He looked very specific, like he was supposed to be somebody Premiani didn't like or something.
Probably an editor. Oh, dear. Well, we better wrap up our talk about Doom Patrol now, so we're not keeping you too much into your morning. Do you want to hang around for the Mailbag of Doom segment?
Oh, sure.
Each week we ask people a question of the week, and last week it was, who's your favourite henchman in comics? Another favourite question, I'm sorry.
but wow, that was tough. There's so many quality henchmen.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to get your perfect one, just one that stands out to you at the moment. So we heard from Aaron Long, who's at Juice005 on Twitter, and he said Ben D from California. Aaron always taking a shot at his friends.
Yes. we heard from Nicholas at NickRDE on Twitter. He said Eric Joston, a.k.a. Power Man, a.k.a. Goliath, a.k.a. Atlas. Strong arm lucky to so many, and he eventually became a hero.
Martin Gray, who's at Mark Gray, he said the best henchman in comics is a hench monkey. He said Brainiac's cheapy chimp chap Coco. I've never
seen
that.
That's a very Martin Gray answer.
It is.
That's exactly what I would expect him to say.
Jay Bandoy at W Bandoy, he said he's always been a fan of Boba Fett. Pretty sure he's mastermind behind capturing Han and Leia. And then said, art by Brian Rood. So I'm assuming there's a Boba Fett comic I've missed somewhere.
He did a picture with his tweet that was really cool.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I missed that one.
Our mate at Fractures, who's Category 6 Kaiju Frack at the moment, he said Mento.
God.
Mike gets upset at every mention of Mento.
Yeah. I'm not a big Mento fan, Jeff. Not at all.
So I see.
At Shmoby One, good old Moby One, he said Muttley. According to Comic Vine, he has appeared in 39 comics. So yeah, Muttley was cool. I like dogs.
Oh, I could go with Muttley. Yes. He had a good raspy laugh.
Yeah.
We heard from Rift, who's at Rift1821, and he said Laserbeak, the flying transformer bird thing. It's actually a cassette, isn't it?
Yes, correct.
He said, hands down, the most reliable and dependable henchman ever. I don't know about that.
And we finally heard from at Ostrakus1, and he said pretty much every henchman from Batman 66. Those guys had to deal with the wackiest shit.
So, they all got a free uniform, though.
Well, yeah, true.
And we got an email response from Dr. Ange, He talked about our last step a little bit. He said, I've always told you guys that the show is awesome, but there is something great when I hear you reviewing an issue, and I can tell you are giddy with happiness over the awesomeness of it all. And that was evident in this review of the Danny issues, issues that rank high in my mind too. Perhaps my favorite moment is when Jane outsads the tea room of despair. That's wonderful. As for last week's question, I was typing my answer of Arrakis and thinking, having a feeling of deja vu. Now I know why. I think I answered Arrakis the first time you asked the question. My fault. As for villain sidekicks, I'm going to head off the ranch a bit, so not exactly in comics. And he said, LeFou, the little sidekick of Gaston in Disney's Beauty and the Beast.
Part of it is
because I wish I was on stage in a filled auditorium singing the song Gaston, which he sings. I saw Hugh Jackman perform that in Melbourne years and years ago.
Oh, wow.
He played Gaston.
Right.
Oh.
The production I saw.
He also said... He plays everyone.
Yeah. He does. He's bloody overachieving bastard. Anyway, I've got the same amount of Oscars as he does. I'm just going to point that out. He also said Shago from Kim Possible. Why she was a sidekick, I'll never know. She kicked such holy ass. She would have been ruling the world. Anyways, thanks again for a great show, Ange.
Thanks, Ange.
So my answer, there's many good ones. I think I'll go with Elrond, the sidekick of Munga Khan from the Justice League International run.
Oh.
Of course you would. Yeah. A little joke, Elrond Hubbard joke. Okay. I was happy that I got the joke, though, at the time. I would pick, for one I've worked on, like in Batman 66, Marsha Queen of Diamonds has the Grand Mogul, this big guy who wears a turban who runs around with her. But on the show, it was played by Woody Strode, who is a famous actor from, it's like, he was notable because like he's in a lot of John Ford westerns, but like he's the only black guy you see in westerns at the time.
Oh wow.
Or whatever. So as a kid I was fascinated by him. It's like, who is this cool dude or whatever who's running around helping John Wayne or whatever. But he just had a lot of presence and was very mysterious, so I had to get him in when I wrote the story, even though I didn't have a lot of room for his part. But I made sure he came off looking good because I liked him.
Cool. For mine, possibly a little bit controversial, but I'm going to say Monsieur Mallard, because he was literally, you know...
He is a henchman.
Literally the arms and legs of the brain. You know, brain was just a brain. Mallard pretty much did everything for him, you know, carrying him around or pushing him around in a pram during the Morrison run. he was a good henchman. Good henchman, yeah.
Yeah, he came through a lot.
Yeah.
If you think about it. That's a tough question. That you probably should revisit this question fairly often.
Do it every week for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of good henchmen.
All right. Well, that's it for the Mailbag of Doom. We better wrap this up.
Yes. If you want to get in touch with us, you can reach us on Twitter at WFDpod. You can always email us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com, and you can reach us on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. And we've also got a brand new Fancy Pants Tumblr page as well, if you're into the Tumblrs or whatever. What are we talking about next week, Paul?
We're going to do two issues of Volume 2, Issues 7 and 8, which are in the Kupperberg-Larsen era. Introducing shrapnel.
Ooh.
And our question of the week for next week is, what's your favorite headquarters in comics?
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
You're not making them any easier.
I'm pretty sure Ange and Mark Gray will have no problem with this one.
Probably not.
It's a bunch of upside down rockets is what I'm assuming.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
And hey, I'm on Twitter as well if anyone wants to check me out.
Mm-hmm. How can they reach you, Jeff?
It's just Jeff Parker. It's my extremely easy to spell name.
Okay.
No funny lines in it or anything.
Right.
Just Jeff Parker.
Okay.
Is there anything you want to plug, Jeff? Anything you got coming up that you want people to pick up?
Oh, just Justice League United. And we have some cool stuff coming up in Batman 66, you know, online right now. Lucas Kettner is drawing the Scarecrow. We brought him in. you're finally going to see this Killer Croc story Dean Haspiel drew.
Oh, wow.
Pretty soon. And Jonathan Case is returning to do another Catwoman story. So there's a lot of very good bits coming up there.
Excellent.
Fantastic. Oh, I hope to see a lot more DC from you in the future.
Well, thank you.
And Doom Patrol would be great if you can work the whole team into Justice League United.
Oh, Doom Patrol, huh? Oh, that's I guess we could,
See what you can do, Jeff.
See what we can do. Oh, yeah. Well.
No pressure.
All right, well, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks, Jeff. That was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Jeff. Really appreciate your time.
All right, cool. Gents, I'll talk to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Gents. We'll let you go. And thanks for your time again.
Thanks for your time.
See ya.
Bye.
Are you there, Paul?
I am still here.
How cool was that?
That was awesome.
That was so awesome.